Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, sports fans. It is Sunday, June 8th, 2014. The New York Rangers are in an 0-2 hole. The time for them to bounce back is right now. How is everyone today? I am your host, Ryan Stern. Welcome to Beyond the Bench. You can follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp. Follow the show on Twitter at Beyond the Bench. Follow the show on Facebook, facebook.com/beyondthebenchbsp. That BSP is for Back Sports Page. Make sure you check out backsportspage.com. Follow them on Twitter at Back Sports Page. And facebook.com/backsportspage. We have a great show for you today. We will be getting into the New York Rangers, whether or not they'll be able to bounce out of an 0-2 hole in a series that they very well could be up 2-0. We have the Spurs, and they are going to try and beat the Heat while they're beating the Heat in their own building. We will get into that real quick. But to start off our show, we're going to bring in a friend of the program. He joined us on our live mock draft a couple weeks ago, right before the NFL draft began. He's from footballdiehards.com. He's going to bring in and let us know which NFL rookies are going to have an impact on the NFL this year, and that is John Laub, once again, of footballdiehards.com. How are you doing this evening, John?
I'm doing excellent, Ryan. How are you?
Oh, doing great. It's a great time to be a sports fan. We've got two championship series going on, and really the sport that you and I both share a passion for, there is no off season. As the great Rich Eisen says, there's a playing season and there's a non-playing season. And it's such a true statement of what the NFL has become that it really is a 24/7, 365 sport.
Absolutely. I've been playing for 25 years fantasy football, and I've probably enjoyed football itself for at least 35 years. And it just is nonstop right now. I mean, I still get excited. I want to read all the news that I can. The draft is a midway point between the Super Bowl and kickoff, and it's an exciting time. And, you know, I, like yourself, are watching the Rangers and the Spurs and the Heat and the Kings, but still somehow I get gravitated towards football.
One thing that I know that you have been working hard on with footballdiehards.com is what the rookie class is going to bring. And going into the NFL draft, really the main question that was really left unanswered until the actual draft was going to be the quarterbacks. And really, a lot of questions are still out there. Do you think that any of the quarterbacks drafted this past May have any shot of getting the nod week one when the season opens up?
You know, Ryan, I'm going to take a little bit of a contrarian perspective here, because even though I had Johnny Manziel listed third on my pre-draft rankings, because I also think about the long term, as far as this season is concerned, I do think Johnny Manziel is going to be the most likely rookie to play, make an impact, and, you know, pique the interest of fantasy fans. I don't believe this Brian Hoyer hype by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not convinced that he's going to last more than one or two games behind center. I'm not even sure if that's going to happen. I got a very good feeling that Manziel is the better player of the two and will play from day one. And when we look at fantasy football, running counts. Yardage counts. I mean, Vince Young, the season that he had as a rookie. Robert Griffin, the season he had as a rookie. I even remember Cordell Stewart, his great season with the Steelers in the 90s. What made all three of those players very interesting and phenomenal was their rushing. And everyone remembers Michael Vick. None of them were terrific long-term players, and we don't know yet about Robert Griffin yet. So Stewart, Vick, and I'm sorry, who did, I forgot for a second, the third one I mentioned earlier. Vince Young. I think Manziel fits into that category. He is just going to put together a lot of rushing yardage this year. I don't see how he doesn't get 700 yards rushing if he plays 14 games. That's only 50 yards a game. That is not an astronomical amount of yardage to expect from a running quarterback who takes the ball down and runs with it. I don't think you'll have incredible passing numbers, but if the Browns aren't very good, which I don't think they will be, they will expect Manziel to make plays, and he just will. He's an improviser. It's in his DNA. There's no difference between Vince Young and Michael Vick and him their freshman years. He's going to take off. Now, by doing that, defensive backs will cheat. Linebackers will cheat. And Manziel, the playmaker, will lift the ball over to wide open running backs, tight ends, and receivers, and he will make plays. So if I got to look at a guy who I love for this year, it's Manziel.
I absolutely agree that I think of any of the quarterbacks that have a shot at starting week one, I think the most logical answer is going to be Johnny Manziel. The other one that I think has an outside shot is going to be a Teddy Bridgewater, only because I don't think that Matt Cassel and Christian Ponder are really long-term answers. And whether or not the Vikings want to get him experience from the beginning or they want to sit him, almost like what the Bengals did with Carson Palmer, where they sat him behind John Kitna, I think Teddy Bridgewater does have an outside shot at making an impact right away.
For the most part, I agree with you. However, I don't know enough about Mike Zimmer's philosophy at this point. I also think he has at least two seasons to turn the Vikings around. I don't think he's desperate this year to turn the Vikings around, so I do think he'll play Castle at least for the first quarter poll. Now, I love Bridgewater long-term. I think the Vikings have talent around him. He might be in a better long-term position than Johnny Manziel. And I did have Bridgewater ranked higher than Manziel. I think down the road, Bridgewater will probably be the better player. I just don't know when he's going to find the field. And because of that, I think by week 8 or 9, Bridgewater's probably going to be on the field. But what if some miraculous way Cassell turns, leads the team to a 3-5, 4-4 start? But I love Bridgewater's skill set. I like the fact that he drops. He's motivated. You know, he'll make this an adversarial type of season where he's going to prove something. I always like that in a quarterback. I don't think he's going to be given the keys to the car, and I like that he's got to, you know, fight and compete with it. And Castle is a serviceable player. He's not a great player, but he's serviceable, so I understand why Zimmer would probably go with him early, let Bridgewater learn from the veteran. But as far as long-term, I definitely think Bridgewater is going to be a very good NFL player, and he landed in a good spot. And he's probably number two this year as far as making a fantasy impact.
Now, the one, I think, well, I guess I would call it a long shot, but considering where he was drafted, and you very rarely see fourth-round quarterbacks starting right away. But you also have to look at the situation that he's in. And I know all the rumors are out that the Houston Texans are trying to get Ryan Mallett from the New England Patriots. And I think if Ryan Mallett ends up in Houston, he's the week one starter. Do you think there's any shot Tom Savage can get the nod in Houston?
You know, that's interesting because I saw Tom Savage play in college and I was never overly impressed with him. And then all the reports came out and everyone was waxing poetically against him. I think he probably fell to where he deserved to be drafted based on his play on the field and based upon the hype that he received after the NFL mini or the NFL in Indianapolis, the training, the draft prospects and everything. I'm not convinced that he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. I think there's a lot to work with there, but I think he would be better served to have a year on the bench. I think it would be great to play behind Matt Schaub and to learn from Bill O'Brien. I mean, they could. This is the type of kid to me, if you put him in this year, you might really kill him long term. I think young people like this, young quarterbacks who aren't ready for the NFL, they get just mauled and overwhelmed and their confidence is shot. You know, obviously if the Texans are desperate and things go wrong, he could go in there, but I can't picture him. I think he's kind of a practice squad player this year. That's just my opinion about it. I think they're going to go with other people and try to see what works out with them before they put Savage in. I just don't think he's ready.
Now, the one position that has really become an unknown was the one that used to be the one that was drafted early and often, and that's the running backs. And now even in NFL drafts, you're starting to see the value of running backs drop. And I guess it doesn't really matter where you're drafted in the NFL draft to have an impact. It all depends on what situation and the opportunities that you're going to be handed. Which of this year's drafted rookies do you think gets the most touches?
Now, first thing, Ryan, I totally agree with you. I've never seen running backs in the last 2 years. There used to be one or two of those guys drafted in the first round. Sometimes four would go. I mean, I'm telling you how old I am now. And you used to be able to pinpoint these guys who you knew were going to be the workhorse for their teams, and they had performed in college, and you knew the system was right for them. And sometimes we were wrong. The guy we liked didn't perform the way we had hoped. You know, or an injury to Tachana Carter or a guy like Blair Thomas just blew up with the Jets. But you could feel pretty good with three or four running backs at the top. The last 2 years, I mean, the position is just so devalued. And this year, though, I think there's only one guy to me who really stands out above everyone else, and I'm going to try to get him in a lot of drafts. And I'm surprised so far, the experts that I hear are kind of reserved about him, but I'm all in on Bishop Spanky. I think this kid is a great player. I loved him at Washington. He has some faults, but I think every kid coming out of college has a few faults. But I try to look at the macro and not overanalyze the micro. I think the kid can play. I think he ended up in the perfect situation in Tennessee. I think he's probably going to get 200 carries, and I do think he's going to get 50 receptions because the kid can catch the ball out of the backfield. And if there's a chance that I'm going to be able to take a rookie running back who's going to get at least 250 touches, maybe 275, I'm going to take him. And to even make it better, there is no other talent on that Titans roster. Sean Green, he's a jag. There's no reason to draft Sean Green from a fantasy standpoint unless Sankey goes down and unless there's just no one else you might pick him up off the waiver wire. But Sankey is a short yardage player. He is a three-down back. He's explosive, and he's on the right team. I think he's a third-round pick in a fantasy. I'd have no problem with him as my second running back, and I would love to steal him as my third running back if I could get two other guys early.
One guy that really intrigues me, being in the New York metropolitan area, and that is going to be Andre Williams. The kid led the entire nation in rushing last year. He's pretty much what the Giants have been looking for since the days of your Thunder and Lightning with Tiki Barber and Ron Dayne, with Andre Williams. I can already see him being at least the goal line back for the Giants, and the Giants don't really feature passing running backs catching a lot of passes out of the backfield, which we all know that is not a specialty of his, as he caught zero last year. What do you think about Andre Williams coming into this year?
Now, I had before the draft, I had Andre Williams ranked 6th at my running back. I do like him, and I actually agree with you. He's the perfect back for a Tom Coughlin team. He's a grinder. He's a power back. He would love to get the ball 20 times a game and wear you down. I think he can be a closer in the cold in the fourth quarter if the Giants have a 10-point lead. He might be a little limited in the beginning of a game early in the season until he gets the offense, until he can do the blitz pickup, until he can catch. I think Eli on first down is going to need a back who can catch the ball out of the backfield. So I'm not sure if Andre Williams is going to be able to do that in the first half of the season, but I could definitely see him getting 5, 6, 7 plays scripted early in the year, short yardage, possibly goal line, fourth quarter. We're going to ask you to know this small base package. We're going to expect you to do certain things. As you master those, we can bring you in on more plays. I do like the talent just from running the football, but I think he's a compiler. In order to get that 100 yards, he probably needs 22 to 25 carries a game, but that's something the Giants could use. They have not been able to rely on that. Brandon Jacobs, when they went to their first Super Bowl, was good at that. He was never great, but I think Andre Williams is a better prospect than Brandon Jacobs was or ever became in the Giants uniform. I definitely think by next year, Andre Williams should be the main guy. But, you know, it's so hard in the NFL. We turn over so quick. You know, maybe Coughlin's gone, a new regime, they draft another back. So I hate to project 2 years out. But I do like Andre Williams' long-term potential. I just don't think he's going to get that 200 carries. I kind of look at maybe 140 carries by the end of the season, and hopefully if you hear he's going to be the short yardage guy, that would be great. I did like him at Boston College, and I do think he's the right guy for the Giants.
We're going to go quickly through wide receivers and tight ends so we can let you go. I know you have an early wake-up call tomorrow morning. The wide receivers, we all knew that this was a loaded class for wide receivers. Let's first focus on some of the guys that were drafted early, and we'll get into some of maybe the sleepers that we can pick up late in the draft. Your big early round guys, your Sammy Watkins, your Mike Evans, your Odell Beckhams, Kelvin Benjamin – who has the best situation?
I personally believe the best situation is Sammy Watkins. I mean, you got to worry a little bit about A.J. Manuel, but Sammy Watkins is going to be the number one guy on that team. I like what Buffalo is doing. They got rid of Stevie Johnson, so you know Watkins is going to play. They do have talent at the other wide position, at the other wide receivers on the field. So even though he may get double teamed, but I don't think you can double team him all the time, they do have pass-catching running backs, so you might not be able to always put a safety on top of him. But I think his talent is so great. I'm definitely very intrigued by getting Sammy Watkins. But I have Sammy Watkins rated at an A-minus and Mike Evans at a B-plus. The reason why I have Evans as a B-plus is because you do have Vincent Jackson. You have a lot of talent on that Tampa Bay offense also. I just don't see Mike Evans getting the number of targets as Sammy Watkins. I do think it's very, very close. I happen to be a Watkins fan, but it's over, you know, if I had 52 or 100 drafts 52 times, I take Watkins. 48 times I take Evans, but I do like Watkins a little bit better this year, but it is very close. Now, the guy I am high on is I do like Odell Beckham. I think the kid is going to play. I think Eli Manning needs a guy like him. With Victor Cruz is still going to demand the double teams. You still have, hopefully Reuben Randall gets his act together, so you have a third receiver out there. So I think Odell Beckham is going to get a lot of targets from Eli Manning. He is also going to help on special teams. So I very likely he'll at least score at least one touchdown on a return this year. And then the other guy that I think is very intriguing is I do like Jordan Matthews of the Eagles. I think his skill set is very good for a Chip Kelly offense, and I'm intrigued by him long term.
One guy who really sticks out to me, and it's because of the offense that he's going into and the type of player that he can really fill in for, and that's going to be Brandon Cooks, because I think he can fill in for a lot of the different things that they asked Darren Sproles to do, and where he's almost going to play a Percy Harvin type role for the Saints. Do you see him getting as many targets as someone like a Darren Sproles may have gotten?
You know, the Brandon Cooks is a very hard one for me to evaluate because there's so much talent on the New Orleans Saints. I mean, even though they did get rid of Sproles, they still have Graham Colston and Kenny Stills. I'm very high on Kenny Stills. I liked him at Oklahoma. He's coming into his second year. So my biggest problem is trying to discern how many targets Cooks will get. Now, Pierre Thompson was amazing last year out of the backfield and the number of targets he got. Pierre Thomas actually got more targets than Darren Sproles by the end of the season. So I think that might limit Cooks a little bit. I graded Cooks as a B for this year. I like Cooks. I think he'll get about 800 yards receiving, but I think he's going to be up and down. I could see three catches, 25 yards 1 week, and then two receptions for 75 yards and a touchdown next week. I think he's going to be all over the place and unpredictable. I think it'll be a lot on the game plan. And since Sean Payton is one of those offensive masterpieces, you never know where he's going to go to, but he's going to find the open guy. He's going to scheme for the open guy. And some weeks he'll scheme for Cooks. Other weeks he might not scheme for him, or the defense might take Cooks out. And Drew Brees is so smart. So it's so unpredictable, but I do have him rated as a B. I like his potential. I think Odell Beckham will be a little more consistent.
Give me a sleeper. Maybe a guy that was drafted in the fourth or later round, or someone who a rookie who you're seeing go later than you would have expected, but you think is going to have a real big year right away.
I'm intrigued by Martavius Bryant on the Steelers. I think he's kind of a Ben Roethlisberger, Mike Tomlin type of guy. He's big. He's strong. He might not be the best route runner at this point in his career. He might be a little bit raw, but Ben Roethlisberger makes plays. He runs around. He avoids sacks. Martavius Bryant is the type of guy, if a defensive back turns away from him and looks in the backfield and tries to cheat, Martavius Bryant could get open behind you. And Ben Roethlisberger has that arm. I mean, I'm very, very intrigued by Bryant on the Steelers. They've lost so much talent. It's actually amazing that the Steelers can still get production from. You know, we thought last year losing what they did at the wide receiver, now they lose Cotchery. You know, now they lose Emmanuel Sanders. And they just have Antonio Brown, and I think there's going to be possibilities for Martavius Bryant to play on that team. I am intrigued by him, and I think fantasy fans need to watch him during the preseason and training camps to see where his role is. He going to be on the field, for 25 snaps a game?
quickly onto the tight ends before we let you go. And it seems like there are a couple different tight ends that really were put into good situations, except maybe the first tight end that was taken with Eric Ebron going to the Lions. The Lions do have two other tight ends on the roster that were productive last year. Do you think that Eric Ebron can jump in right away? And we all know Eric Ebron needs to improve on his blocking in order to be an every down tight end. Or do you see them possibly just utilizing him as a slot receiver?
You know, I tend to agree with you very much, Ryan. I was a little disappointed that Ebron went to Detroit. They have so much offensive firepower. I mean, Pettigrew can block. Pettigrew and Fourier are pretty decent near the goal line. Ebron will play, but, I mean, how many snaps is he going to get? You still have Calvin and Johnson. I'm very high on Golden Tate. Look at the number of receptions that Reggie Bush gets out of the backfield. I mean, how much is left for Ebron, a rookie tight end, who historically rookies are not huge fantasy contributors? And then you put Ebron in that type of situation. I drop him below Chase Amaro. I think Amaro ended up in a much better situation. The Jets are desperate for help. The kid, Cumberland, is a Jag. Cumberland is not someone who I am overly impressed with. He can make plays in two tight end sets. Maybe Cumberland can sneak if a defensive back is cheating on Amaro. But I think Amaro has much better talent this year amongst the fantasy rookies. I think Amaro's worth drafting. I think he's possibly a top 12 tight end by the end of the season. And I do think he's going to outproduce Ebron very much.
The one guy who really intrigues me, and it's, again, because of a situation, and that's Troy Nicholas. He went to Arizona middle of the second round. The kid is an all-around tight end right away, and I think that people aren't giving him enough credit for the athleticism that he has. The Cardinals are pretty bare when it comes to tight ends, and I think right away he's going to be able to step in, and Carson Palmer has had success with tight ends in the past.
You know, he's intriguing because I think Brian Kelly's a tough coach. I also think Bruce Arians is a tough coach, but I like Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians is a good tough. He makes players better, especially offensive players. Nicholas is a little raw to me. He played linebacker for a couple years at Notre Dame. I don't think he is a great route runner, but physically he is special. I do think Arians can use his skill set, and he can get production out of him. And there isn't, I mean, Hausler is the guy above you on the Cardinals depth chart. I can't imagine Hausler being the guy all season in Arizona. So I do agree with you that Nicholas will get some opportunities. Nicholas is a great blocker, so he will be on the field. And if you're going to put two running backs, and especially an Andre Ellington, who's more of a receiving back, a home run hitter, why not put Nicholas on the field as a blocker? You can keep Nicholas in. He can chip on defensive ends. You can run Ellington out of the backfield against linebackers, mismatches. So I do think Nicholas is going to be on the field. But I think he's probably looking at 35 receptions, maybe 4 touchdowns. But long term, I do think he has potential with Bruce Arians in that offense.
John, I want to thank you for giving us some of your cutting into your sleep time, but want to thank you for, again, great insight into the NFL rookies. Everyone, make sure you follow John. He is new to Twitter, at GridironShoal91, GridironShoal91. John, as soon as we get closer to the fantasy season, love to have you on. Maybe we'll get into some of the bigger names that we're used to hearing.
Excellent, Ryan. I had a great time, and it's my pleasure to help out. And go Rangers.
All right, go Rangers. Have a good one, John.
You too.
The great John Laub of footballdiehards.com. Once again, give him a follow on Twitter at gridironshoal91. What a great segue that was, John, with the Go Rangers chant. And yes, the Rangers are down 0-2. Am I worried? A little, only because now it means that they have to win 4 out of 5. And I'm now trying to put my media hat on instead of my fan hat. When you're looking at these games and going into the series, you didn't find one expert that picked the Rangers. Everyone said the Kings were going to win. And you know what? They may end up winning. But I don't think any of these experts thought that through 2 games, the Kings would have held a regulation lead for 0 seconds. Yeah, part of that is the fact that the Rangers have blown 2-goal leads in the first 2 games. And game one, I think, was more on them. Game two, I'm sorry, and I don't want to sound like a fan here, but you cannot allow that third goal by the LA Kings to count. I've watched the play numerous times, and yes, Ryan McDonagh does initiate contact, but when he initiates the contact, Dwight King is partially in the crease, which he's not allowed to be when contact is made with a goalie. After Ryan McDonagh tries to push him away, it's the what should have been called was the second effort by King. When he makes that second plunge to get to the front of the net, his skates interlock with Henrik Lundqvist's right pad. He gets a deflection and puts it in. How is Henrik Lundqvist supposed to stop that? And it, once again, yes, I know Ryan McDonagh initiated the contact. But when contact was initiated, he was in the crease, and it was the second effort that had nothing to do with Ryan McDonagh that forced the issue of Henrik Lundqvist not being able to make the stop. And I read something very, very interesting when it comes to the refereeing. And I'm going, I apologize, I want to get it right for you. But the referee that made that non-call was Wes McCauley. Wes McCauley, in his last 11 games that he has done at the Staples Center for the Los Angeles Kings, is 11-0. I'm not trying to say that this is a Tim Donaghy situation, but I cannot say, and you cannot deny the fact that this is now 11, and the Kings have been, they're a good team, but they've shown that they can be beaten. Wes McCauley has now done 11 consecutive games at the Staples Center, and the Kings have won all 11 of them. But you can, that being said, the Rangers cannot continue to blow leads. But the Rangers have shown that they are fully capable of winning these games. And the speed of the Rangers early in the game is making a difference. And that it's the reason why the Rangers have had 2-goal leads in each of the games. Do I think the Rangers will get out of the 0-2 hole? It's going to be very tough. Can they? Absolutely. They absolutely have what it takes to bounce back. And who knows? You come home, and the Rangers haven't been great at home, but they've been pretty. They've been better at home during the playoffs. The crowd is going to be insane come tomorrow night. Everyone has been saying that it's not the same Garden, that it's all suits, and it hasn't been as loud. No, it hasn't been as loud, especially when you look back to 1994. And I hate to keep bringing it up, but that's just what you have to base things on. This crowd is going to be different. This is going to be as loud as you're going to hear the new Madison Square Garden. And who knows, if they get behind the Rangers and the Rangers jump out to leads and are able to hold it, because remember now the Rangers will be able to set up the matchups that they want. Maybe they go back to LA 2-2. And if you go back to LA 2-2, you're now going back with momentum. And I don't think the Kings have as much momentum coming this way because of the fact that they still haven't held a regulation lead. They have not been better through 60 minutes than the New York Rangers at any point. The New York Rangers can beat the Los Angeles Kings, but they must win these two games at home. And it's going to have to come, and we said going in, there's going to be at least one game, if the Rangers are going to win the Cup, at least one game Henrik Lundqvist is going to have to steal. And he hasn't done that yet. And right now is as good a time as any for Henrik Lundqvist to steal a game. Not saying that he's been bad, because he hasn't. Last night, the three of the goals, one was a great screen by Dwight, the aforementioned Dwight King, where he didn't make contact with Lundqvist on the Willie Mitchell blast from the point. And then you had the play where King knocks him over. You have the deflection by Dustin Brown. Henrik Lundqvist has given the Rangers the opportunity to win each of these games. But he has to step it up even more. And coming home, coming back to the Garden, where when he makes a save and you hear the Henrik chants, this is where you're going to start to see something special from Henrik Lundqvist. And who knows? Maybe by this time next week, we are previewing Game 7. Maybe we are doing a review on the Stanley Cup Finals. But the Rangers know that it comes, and you hear it from all the players, all the coaches. One shift, one period, one game at a time. And that's what the Rangers are going to have to do. They can't win two games tomorrow night. But they need to win one. It's going to be... I can't wait to see what the crowd is like tomorrow. And see how loud it is. One of my everlasting images from 94 is not being able to hear John Amarante sing sing the national anthem because that's how loud it was in the Garden. And I hope that it gets that loud tomorrow. We're going to cut the episode short. I want to thank everyone for listening. But before we let you go, Back Sports page, and I am lucky enough that I will be able to get to cover the event. And that is going to be hosted by Children of the City. Childrenofthecity.com. They're changing the culture of poverty through education and outreach. David Tyree, former New York Giant, is going to be holding a charity bowling event over at Chelsea Piers on Tuesday. Like I said, I'm lucky that I'm going to be able to get there. We will have audio from different players, former and current New York Giants. For tickets, want to make sure that you go to childrenofthecity.com. Go to contact us. They'll be able to direct you on how to either donate or get tickets to the actual show, the actual event. I hope any of my listeners can get out to the event. It's going to be for a great cause. And like I said, next week we will have audio from the event. Also, make sure to check out backsportspage.com over the course of the week as we will be putting up photos and some of the print interviews that we are able to get while we are at the event. I want to thank everyone for listening. I am your host, once again, Ryan Stern. You have listened to Beyond the Bench. Follow us on Twitter at Beyond the Bench. Go to Facebook.com/Beyond the Bench, BSP. And I can be found on Twitter at rstern33, BSP. And once again, a big thank you to John Laub of footballdiehards.com. You can follow him on Twitter at gridironshoal91. Great job breaking down some of the rookies that were just drafted a couple weeks ago and are now getting to learn their new playbooks. Next week, we will have some of the audio, break down the Stanley Cup Finals, whether or not we're looking at a Game 7, and we will get into the NBA Finals. Hopefully we can get the great Randy Zelia on to help us out with that. Until then, everyone, I hope you have a wonderful week.